I'll let the meeting come to order. Thank you very much for perhaps ruining the great part of your day. It's beautiful outside, and if we work together, we can get out of here real quick. Next, please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Ready? Go. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation.
The sheriff? We do not see the sheriff. And no one can fill in for the sheriff. So, moving on. Acknowledgements? No acknowledgements. Public comment? Wow, it's going to be good.
President McKinnon? Yes.
Oh, my goodness, already. Okay, yes, I'm sorry. Yeah. Tina Dickinson. And those two. Okay, three. No.
Good afternoon, Board. Tina Dickinson, Cambria. I would like to relate to you all an experience that a walking buddy friend of mine and I had on Sunday, July the 15th on the Santa Rosa Creek Trail. We walk almost every day. We take a different route sometimes. We don't usually walk this trail, but we decided it was a lovely day, we'd do something different. So we parked along Highway 1 just beyond the bridge, south of the bridge, where there's an area to park, and proceeded to the trail. And we did comment and notice certainly an unusual amount of fresh horse droppings. So we had to kind of sidestep our way through the trail because that is not a very wide trail, and at some points during that trail, it narrows tremendously to where two people just barely have enough room to walk. So we were walking, and about two-thirds of the way along the trail, we looked up, and much to our surprise, there were many horseback riders approaching us. At that point, we were at a very narrow spot, and to the right of us was a very large concrete, I think it's a manhole, and it had blue paint on it, and we were literally forced to get off that trail. And I was going to even get up on top of the manhole cover. It was pretty steep, so I got behind it. Now, just below that is the bank that goes down to the creek. Okay, so I was counting the horses, and there were 15. And a woman who was on horseback said, she could tell that they kept coming by in single file, and she said, there's 15 of us. And I had already counted that. I'd gotten up to 12, and then I was really trying to get out. I mean, it was dangerous. I called Carlos, and I related to him what had happened. Now, when we came out on Windsor, there were no horse trailers, and we walked our way back up to the car on Highway 1. There were no trailers at that parking lot. So when I spoke to Carlos, I said, there were no horse trailers, so how did these people get, you know, their horses over to the ranch? And he said they were parked at the rodeo grounds. And I asked him, I said, well, if that's the case, then they had to go under the bridge through the creek. And he said, yes. Now, I just want to read, this is amazing, but I was going through some CCSD, I was just updating my files, and I found this. It was a notice to the community. On this Santa Rosa Creek Trail, it says, Santa Rosa Creek Stream Bank Restoration Trail Project. In August 2005, the CCSD will begin restoration of a segment of the Santa Rosa Creek between Highway 1 and Windsor Drive, and construction of a pedestrian trail running parallel to the creek. The project is funded under a grant from the California Department of Parks and Recreation and is scheduled for completion by the end of 2005. This is the notice that I guess everybody got. In 2003, a mitigated negative declaration was approved to satisfy California Environmental Quality Act Suite CEQA requirements. All necessary local, state, and federal permits will be in place by August construction start date. The Land Conservancy of SLO County, San Luis Obispo County, and the California Conservation Corps are constructing the project under CCSD supervision. improved habitat for many species. The Santa Rosa Creek habitat restoration is a 200-foot segment of creek that has been severely eroded by seasonal rains. It is a critical spawning area for the South Central Coast Steelhead, a species listed as threatened under the Endangered Species Act. This project will greatly improve habitat for the steelhead, as well as the tidewater goby, red-legged frog, southwestern pond turtle, and numerous other special status species. Benefits of the project: enhance habitat for steelhead trout, improve the water quality of creek, restore native plant species, and enhance the community's trail system. In light of this notice, I find it really hard to believe that 15 equestrians can traverse that trail, knowing that it is specifically designed as a pedestrian trail. My concern is, where is the delineation for equestrian trails? I looked on in a meeting and I left a voicemail, and on Thursday at approximately 8:40 a.m., the general manager called me and we discussed it, and he said at 9 o'clock that morning he was having a meeting with Carlos and that that I would probably be hearing back from him. I've not heard anything yet, but I bring this to your attention because clearly not only are the riders in violation, but the CCSD is in violation of allowing these permits. Carlos told me he had permitted 8 to 10 riders, not 15. And the day before, Saturday, the 14th, there were 3 trailers parked outside the wastewater treatment plant, which meant they were going on that trail. I have no issue with people riding horses, but I sure have an issue on trails that are designed for pedestrians. And let me tell you, this was a potentially very dangerous situation. And I would ask that you really look into where these trails are designated so pedestrians know where they can walk and equestrians know where they can ride. Because I never thought I would encounter anything quite like it, but I did. And I thank you for your time today.
Thank you very much, Tina, for this input. Any clarifying statement of General Manager on that particular issue?
There was a permit issued for 8 to 10 riders. Unfortunately, 15 did show up, and so Carlos was instructed to contact them and to emphasize to them again that's just too many. We are encouraging people to park over by the wastewater treatment plant. So the concerns that we've heard from the public relating to this matter are the horses going under the bridge and impacting the stream, which was indicated by Ms. Dickinson that you know is a steelhead habitat and things like that. So we're soliciting cooperation from them regarding parking over at the wastewater treatment facility. We have some parking over there. It can hold probably 2 or 3 trailers, and then from there they can leave and access the ranch without going under the highway and on the bridge. Mm-hmm. With regards to, you know, the delineation of where they're supposed to be and where they're not supposed to be, that's something we can work on and address and probably, you know, put on the PROS agenda and really talk about it then. But also, you know, I think it's important to engage the Friends of the Fiscalini Ranch Preserve too and have them a part of that dialogue and that process. But Tina did call me.
To enter the notice, the copy of the notice that we received in 2005 regarding this project. The problem with parking there, though, is that the trail that they're going to take at the wastewater treatment plant would be that trail, which is very, very narrow, and then prohibits pedestrians. I would hate to think what... In your GM report, General Manager, you said you went to a conference, and one of the items on the conference was liability issues. And I can assure you, this could be a huge liability issue. So I ask your consideration. Thank you.
Thank you.
Robin? I just also wanted to make a comment on that, and I agree. We need to work through PROS and have this conversation. The interesting thing on that particular trail, I know both of us live in that neighborhood, and I too was surprised, it's been about 2 or 3 years ago, I was going down as you go up over Huntington and you can cut through about midway and cut down that way. And there is a trail marking, and it was the first time I'd ever seen, it's called multi-use. And it did say equestrian, but I think the conversation is important to be had and find out which trails really accommodate, and is, again, back to safety, which are safe and which are not. Thank you.
Thank you.
And maybe clearly marking those and maybe tasking that with the Facilities and Resource Department. And then also doing some public outreach and reaching out to the equestrian folks. So there's a mutual understanding and a mutual respect for each other. I think that's first and foremost, is that everybody has a mutual respect for each other, and that we understand areas that are specifically designated for equestrian use and that are specifically designated for pedestrian use. So we can all live in harmony out there on the ranch. So.
Good. Next public comment, Paul Carlson.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen of the board and president. I just would like to comment really briefly on the use of the outside consultants by the board. And I'm in favor of that. There have been numerous complaints about the cost of it, and there's people in the community that could do this instead for the community. Well, I feel like the board has a responsibility to provide unbiased and proper consulting information. And an example, the press release that was the back of this document, and we find that this information was actually in a prior report put out by Mr. Fryer. And the name of that report is An Investigation of the Marginal Costs of Seawater Desalinization in California. This was for prepared for residents for responsible desalination. So my point is that we have an independent report prepared by the person who prepared the report that's being presented, and you could find a definition in the dictionary that would probably meet the requirements of, yes, it's independent. But in my interpretation, I question how independent that is. So the point is that I feel that the community inputs to the board are going to be pretty, there's going to be always some underlying agenda in them. And just very briefly, one more thing on this. I question what marginal, by the way, marginal cost of water is. In this same synopsis here, it's mentioned, even with a potentially low energy cost assumption, the Q&M cost alone for a facility in Santa Barbara is projected to be $1,470. But then it adds the capital cost will result in a total marginal cost well above $2,000. Well, you know, are we including capital costs and marginal costs? I mean, my accounting background is such that a marginal cost is the materials to do the job, which is labor and...
For one additional unit.
Correct.
Marginal cost.
Correct. So the point is that these things get slanted around. It's like and by the way, there's a lot of good information in this report as far as water conservation and things we can do to, well, it's all water conservation. That's all good stuff, and I would like to see us do that. But at the same time, I want to thank the board for the job they're doing, and also to encourage you to continue to provide information that is of benefit to the whole community and not a small group. Thank you.
One question before you go. Paul, did you, the 2,000 to 3,000, is that what you're indicating?
Yes.
Per acre foot?
Correct.
Yeah, you didn't say that, and
I'm sorry,
want to make sure.
No,
that's fine.
Correct.
Yeah, I think that's very helpful. Thank you very much. Next is Elizabeth Bettenhausen. You don't think so?
Those are her comments for the record.
Oh,
they're written.
Oh, okay. I'm with you. Good old 9A.
To let people know that Green Space did help sponsor a independent report by James Fryer called The Review of Water Use and Water Management Alternatives in Cambria, California. The full report can be seen at the Green Space website at www.greenspacecambria.org under Critical Issues Desalination. And there are it's 44 pages of really great information, and the capital costs and Most of the other data in the report is based on 20 years of billing data, customer service records, and answers to public records requests from the CCSD. So most of the information in the report is from the CCSD itself, and Mr. Fryer has done reports in the past that have come to the conclusion that desalination capital marginal cost would be $2,000 to $3,000 an acre foot. With the Cambria CSD plan, he came up more with the cost of $3,000 to $4,000 per acre foot. So I highly recommend that everybody read that report. There are lots of great information in there about conservation and the lack of retrofitting in Cambria, that there is at least 1,000 homes that have not been retrofitted, and that multifamily and commercial, a lot of the commercial facilities may not have been retrofitted yet. And one of the major things and points that he has in the report is that we need saturation studies and baseline data. I did object to the $69,000 spent on a consultant because the consultant is going to come up with some of the same information that we came up with, and I thought that $69,000 would be better spent on buying washing machine rebates and low-flow toilet rebates for the community, and that probably would save us water. As Mr. Cliff commented at the ACE meeting, it is an independent report. Green Space does not agree with all the things in the report, like the fact that we may only need 50 acre feet of water. I'm sure that may be a little too low. On the other hand, if we actually did the conservation that Mr. Fryer is talking about in that report, we may only need 50 acre feet. It's hard to say. We'd have to see if everything were retrofitted. Maybe 50 acre feet is the number, but it's certainly not 602 acre feet. And if you'll all remember, that's where we started. So I disagree with Mr. Carlson, and it is an independent report. It's got really great data in there, and the billing data and the customer records speak for themselves. So thank you.
Thank you. There's no more from the public did what the boards did going back to 2001 and 2003 in their actions. They took a well-respected consulting firm. They used that data that was based on 1999 information, Kennedy Jenks, and they used it with great discretion and analysis. And what they did, they took those facts and with judgments, they drew conclusions, as we all do. And the decisions they made were based on data that they had at the time. We, fortunately, have had the ability to have 20/20 hindsight. So we did look at the data, and then we said the information was overstated, perhaps. But no way did we want to demean the boards or Kennedy Jenks. They did the best that they could do with the data they had available. And I think we're dealing with a new set of information, and 10 years from now, it may also be challenged and changed, and I'm sure it will be to some degree. But I wanted to make sure that in no way we were disparaging either the board members and their contributions, or, in fact, Kennedy Jenks, which is still an excellent body of information that the Army Corps is using as a basis, as well as extrapolating into the future. So with that, I will close a public comment. Is there anything in the agenda from board members that you would like to either remove or change? Consent agenda. I hear utter silence. Oh, okay, we'll get that. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay, we're good. We're good with the agenda review. And okay, under six, managers and boards report. First, we have General Manager, your report, sir.
Thank you, President McKinnon and board members. Attached is my general manager's report and all the supporting staff reports for the other department managers. A lot of activities going on. We continue to do a lot of great things within the CCSD for the community, especially relating to infrastructure. And and see if we can get that process moving forward. So we showed him the room that was available, and he was very optimistic about it, really excited about wanting to have a presence in the community and have a presence up there. And so at some point in time, hopefully in the next month or so, there'll be an MOU or at least some kind of resolution acknowledging that. As you can see in my general manager's report, I did go to a special districts conference. It was the first general manager's conference from the California Special Districts Association. And because taxpayers paid for that, I think it was important in my manager's report that I listed all the classes that I attended. Very, very encouraging. The special districts is a wonderful association that I'm glad we support. There is special districts administration certification, which is for your general managers. There's an opportunity for general managers to become certified. I would like to pursue that. There's also an opportunity for your district to be certified. I'd like to at least at some point in time, which entails a lot of work, but I think having our district accredited or certified by the CSDA is an important undertaking that we may want to consider. So maybe as one of our goals or objectives for the next year, we can talk about that. But being a certified district, I think, shows and tells our ratepayers and our customers and our owners that we're good stewards of their resources. And then finally, there's an opportunity with the CSDA recognition of special district governance. That's for board members, and it's 10 hours, and you can do it online or you can go to a conference and attend it. But it's 10 hours of just recognition of special district governance. Was designed to honor special district board members and trustees, and is comprised in two parts: the completion of a special district leadership academy and 10 hours of continuing education credits on governance and protocol and things like that. So I'll be bringing you some more information back. I'll make sure that each one of you get a copy of this handout that we did. The annual conference for special districts is in September down in San Diego, but I believe it conflicts with our board meeting. But again, I want to thank you for sending me there. When you go to these conferences, it's from early in the morning to late at night. It's not lackadaisical time. So that's really all I have in my manager's report. If there's anything else that you want to ask me about what's going on within the district, I'll be more than happy to answer any questions at this time.
Will you cover finance? As we see what's happening out in our world and the debt crisis on most of our countries around the world, and ours not to be considered in any way good with over $15 trillion in debt and climbing every day, the idea of canceling debt at this point should be done, I think, with great concern. So I just leave that as simply a thought.
Go ahead. If you would like me to respond to that, but go ahead.
I would just like echo that. I like the idea of trying to get 4%, but we don't know what's going to happen.
We really
years
don't.
From now.
And again, cash is king.
And another thing about that particular issue, as far as cash goes, I think that it should be our policy to take any LAIF funds that we have and earmark them. We're going to need some of those funds for reconstructing our infrastructure. We're going to need some funds for certain things. And I think when the state is looking to try and grab cash from any place they can find it, I think if we've designated it, it's going to be more difficult for them to, rather than a free-floating fund. I think it was in the paper today, I didn't even read it, about state parks as $54 million kitty, and I'm sure they're going to jump on that. So anything we can do to earmark those funds, I think, is a wise policy.
Excellent, yes. And just so we don't forget, that $166,000 loan that we have out to ACE, based on 6B and your comments and so forth, what does transpire, we might want to really consider a return of that loan. Yeah, it's 6B, but I don't want to get into it, but I think that's...
I do have some additional comments about the general manager's report, if it's appropriate now.
Yeah.
I see that the we're trying to get the Fiscalini Ranch plan. Apparently, it's being scheduled for August for the Planning Commission, and then after that, the Fiscalini Ranch plan will then go to the Board of Supervisors, and we're waiting for that document to be set. I think there's an excellent opportunity, once that plan has been accepted, that now we can go through with any modifications, be it where the skate park is, or where the dog park is, or where we're going to do with equestrians, etc. We can start addressing those things, but it seems to have sat there for a while without any attention. So I'm hoping that staff pays attention and makes sure it doesn't get specify a fee, because we can't come up with a fee that's arbitrary. We've got to take one that that relates to our infrastructure. I'm hoping, though, that we don't have to go jump through a whole bunch of hoops on that. My preference would be to we've already know what Templeton does and what other people do. And yes, we need a stamp of approval. And we do know that $2,500 is just nothing. If we pick the numbers, eventually somebody's going to give us a recommendation. If we picked a number that was ridiculously low, or low enough that we know that any formal study would prove to be a minimum, let's say $15,000, and set that as a fee, knowing that that's a minimum and it can always go up from there, I don't want to see a study and another study and another study preventing us from taking that first step, and that first step is to release some water meters. So that's my preference. And just a comment, it's an opportunity for me to discuss it with the board when I normally wouldn't have it. And yes, I also agree with the bankruptcies, and I already mentioned the fact that I think we should earmark some funds. So thank you. That's it.
Other comments?
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. Just want to call attention to a correspondence we got from Assemblyman Jeff Gorell, who commended our general manager on recognition in the Pacific Coast Business Times as a highly ranked special district in the Tri-County area. And I think that's quite commendable, and I think it's well deserved. Thank you.
Director Robinette.
Thank you. Just going back to what Director Barringer was also talking about, I was also thinking about, just first for clarification, when we're talking about the connection fees, just to define that, we're talking about connection fees for, like, new construction. Is that what we're talking about?
Yes, that's correct, for water and wastewater connections, and that evaluation of that would be relative to what we're currently charging.
Okay. Then what I would comment on would be that, to me, it would be very, very important that we have representation from the Build-Out Reduction Finance Committee. That committee worked very, very hard at that time with setting fees for certain purposes, and it would be back first to that particular committee and have some input from people that have worked a long, hard time on that prior to this, too.
Thank you. Merle?
A couple comments on the general manager's report. First of all, I want the community to know that the cost of the general manager attending that conference will be offset by reductions in our insurance premium. The SDR RMA provides what's called credit incentive points, and he will get credit, our district will get credit for his attendance there. Quite frankly, we will make money off his attending. So we'll actually get a bigger credit than what it costs for him to attend. That's under the basis of SDRMA believing that a well-managed district, that management, an educated and well-managed district is a primary importance in saving insurance premiums. And so he will actually get credit for that. So that is not a cost. It was a cost to the district in terms of him going, yeah. But it will be you will see a reduction in next year's premium for SDRMA on their insurance.
Could we send them to another conference? No.
There are certain ones that are.
This one's one, right?
I believe it, actually, this conference in San Diego will also I think there are credits for that also. I will be attending that, but it will not be at this district's expense as a director at SDRMA. They will send me. And although, because they're paying to send me, the district doesn't get credit against its insurance for me going. If the district sent me, they would give a credit. But since SDRMA has a meeting at that meeting, and so all the expenses for me attending that will be picked up by SDRMA, which for the public is Special District Risk Management Authority, are the people who provide the insurance for our workers' comp and property and liability coverage. That's one thing. I respectfully disagree on the concept of not looking at paying off some bills, providing some refinancing of that side fund if need be. So at least refinance it, because paying 7.5% is really not anything that any one of us would like to pay in this marketplace when you can get 2% and 3%.
I agree with you, by the way.
Interest rate.
On that one, not on the capital projects, but yes, on the...
The other thing is that paying those bills off enhances our financial standing and makes it more easy to attract financing that we might need.
To a degree. Debt to equity. The more debt you have, the more it hurts you. So... It's a two-edged sword, and I think what my only point was, let's look at it closely,
right.
And the 7.5, absolutely, the capital equipment, maybe don't do it.
But. And one way to designate funds is to simply pay off the bill. You can designate $200,000 as reserve against this one particular loan, but why not just pay it off?
Mm-hmm. Anyhow,
that's my thought, and I understand your positions about, because we're seeing these things come from these other communities, and I noticed the news is starting to talk about Fresno.
Who knows how many others?
So you don't know how many others are really involved, and I do know that we are the envy of the, I was at the Special District's chapter meeting last Friday. And we are the envy in this area in terms of financial stability. So they wish they had what we have.
We're very fortunate.
Okay. I
was just wondering if your the general manager's report included Carlos Mendoza's, because that's some comments.
The whole shooting match.
Okay,
whatever questions you have. And
well then let me bring up the skate park just in case somebody didn't mention it. It is in Carlos's report. And I am encouraged to see that you've made some progress toward getting a relationship with a third party. And I know that, you know, we'd like to shun our responsibilities or our liability for the park, but when it comes down to the bottom line, we will be liable ultimately as the deep-pocketed person. That's just the way life will be. And I would hope that I could get an agreement from the board at this moment. And I understand Director Robinette wanted to make sure we had the T's crossed and the I's dotted on some kind of a safe to skate, and he could open it without having to wait for another director's meeting, for another board meeting. I think it's certainly in his jurisdiction to do so. And especially, Mrs. Robinette, if you could support that, I think I can try and get the support of other people to allow the general manager to open the park if and when he deems it's appropriate without a board meeting.
Not on the agenda.
Well,
we can't get a vote.
Okay, we won't get a vote.
However, I will mention that we do have a draft agreement that has been prepared that is in discussions with the local organization. So there should be something hopefully coming back to the board fairly quickly.
August?
Do we feel, though, that council, do you think it's something that the board has to agree to, or do you think it would be within the jurisdiction of the general manager if he so decides to open the park when it's available?
I believe it would be something the board would approve and frankly want to approve, and we do have a draft. We even have a draft staff report for it, so it should, once we get some feedback from the organization, we should have something for the board fairly quickly.
So for the next month, nobody with a skateboard is going to be just when school opens, we're going to have that board that park open, that'll be great.
From what I understand, there are still issues as far as the status of the repairs and improvements too, and the costs associated with that. But and the general manager might want to speak to that.
There's still about six, and I understand what Director Berenger is saying. It's a resource that I'd like to see open also. There's still about $5,000 or $6,000 at work need to be done. As District Council indicated, we do have a formalized agreement typed up and everything. And there is some activities from some civic leaders around the community to support the park. And we're optimistic that we can bring back an agreement in August to you. And unfortunately, yes, that is another month away. So the alternative, and there, as District Council indicated, it's not on the agenda, so no action can be taken today. You know, the alternative is just to move forward and to and get the thing repaired and get it up and running and open it. But that's something that will probably have to be deliberated and decide upon at another date. But you guys can talk about it all you want.
While on the will be very helpful in terms of making the necessary modifications and repairs to the building. I know that you're interested in upgrading the kitchen, and I think that's very necessary. So I think that that's really moving forward well. I also want to call attention to the fact that the ad hoc fee schedule committee will be having a public meeting on August 13th from 4:30 to 6, again, to solicit input on the proposed fee schedule, specifically for community organizations. The last time we met, we only had one community organization represented, and hopefully we'll have more input this time. I think we're making good progress on a revised fee schedule, and we would hope to finish it up in the near future. And we had some good discussion about events in the hall for, quote, the public good, and a good example of that would be, say, a blood bank, which I think would, without question, be considered to be an event for the public good, which shouldn't be charged a usual fee. So I think we're making good progress on the schedule, and I would hope that we would have a good turnout for that public meeting on the 13th.
Did I misunderstand you? I thought it was August 9th. Oh, no. Okay, 13th. Yeah, 13th.
So to summarize, General Manager, for August, you would be bringing back what regarding the skate park?
We would be bringing back, if the dialogue continues to go in the direction that it's going with regards to a civic organization in town, we are hopeful that we can bring back a formalized agreement because that's what really I believe you asked for at some point in time.
And they would be responsible for maintenance?
The language in the agreement as it's currently drafted indicates that they would have a major fundraiser. It does not specifically say what monetary amount that they would be responsible for, but I think it's a step in the right direction in partnering with another another organization within the community to get the skate park open. I don't think I think it'll be a partnership. That's the key word.
And I do appreciate the. What you're talking about, that the agreement will delineate what would be the responsibility in the partnership, what would the organization that's the community organization, what parts would they be responsible for, what would the CSD be responsible for. And again, I just want to say what we're trying to do here, I really think, in terms of truly being the guardian, actually, of the funding we have for the responsibilities we have, is to just make everything very transparent, very above board, that, when people want us to do things and we can, we want to. But then their lives change, kids grow up, people move, and then we're left then with something that we didn't actually initiate in the first place, but we certainly wanted to be a partner. And so I'm sorry that it takes the time to actually get things understood and agreed to. On the other hand, I think in the future it doesn't come back to haunt us. It's just, I think it's an important first step.
I agree. And, you know, I didn't think that we were trying to slow things down. On the other hand, I think the way the whole thing started was that it was in disrepair and potentially declared dangerous. It wasn't on an agenda. It wasn't like we voted that we had to have something. That was suggested that we have something, the T's crossed and I's dotted on it before we opened it. But it wasn't like we made a vote. And therefore, I don't know why we need to have a board meeting. Because next time, let's say we approve this draft agenda, I don't have to wait another month again until September. I mean, there'll be snow on that thing before we get them going. So I'm just trying to find a process that we can just agree to something next time and let the general manager open it when it's safe. That's my only point.
Thank you.
I had a different topic now. If I could make
topic.
A different topic. Yeah, I'm ready to move on to something else in the general manager's report. On the report, I was wondering if we would get an update on why it is. I'm back to April agreement, I think, when we were asked to support a consultant to take a look at something I believe that Mr. Gresham wanted, and we said...
Good reason.
We can have him... He was supposed to come in July, and Director Robinette is absolutely right to give an update. The site that was is proposed to be evaluated has not gained access to that yet. However, I think what Director Robinette's saying, it would have been nice as part of the consultant agreement to have him at least come publicly or at least through a written correspondence to the board out of professional consideration and say, I haven't been able to evaluate that site yet, and because there was a follow-up. So what I'm hearing you say is that needs to be communicated to us in person or through a written correspondence, and I support that, and I can appreciate that, and I'll make sure that is also on the August agenda.
Thank you. Just a kind of status when we're kind of, you know, we know something's out there and it's pending. We need to know just what happened or where it is.
We're okay, right? Okay. Manager's report. I skipped over consent agenda, the consent on particularly the expenditures. Anybody have any reason to pull any of the items? I'll get you 6B.
You're okay.
I just wanted to... I can do a clarification, can I not? We're going to approve it, but on page 31... Avery Associates, who I love, great resource for this community. But I've seen on a continuing basis expenses related to labor relations. Is that travel an expense?
Correct. The original agreement that we had with Avery and Associates to negotiate our SEIU, our MCE, and our IAFF, which is our three contracts, for labor-related items was $1,700 a month. That does not include expenses. If you look at the itemized bill that we received from Avery and Associates, he dovetails his visits with other local jurisdictions that he represents. So there's some savings there. We budgeted for July, August, and September for Avery and Associates of the total of six. I didn't want to budget an entire fiscal year for him because I was hopeful that we could resolve and finish everything in a timely manner. It may go on for an additional month or two, which comes out of the general fund budget, but we're doing really well there, so I don't see it being a problem.
Okay. All right. Okay, moving on, 6B, long-term water supply alternatives update. Again, General Manager.
Thank you. Bob Greshens, district engineer, is not here today. Bob's mom passed away a couple days ago, so our thoughts and prayers are with Bob and his family. Bob did attach his water supply project, EIR. It mostly focuses on the workshops that we've had, and I know there's some interest regarding those workshops that the Army Corps has put on. And that is part of your packet today. With that, if there's any questions relating to Bob's report, I'll be more than happy to answer them at this time. And our next meeting is August 9th, and that's a special board meeting for the board to consider at least evaluating the alternatives.
With that, we have several people that want to talk about 6B. Elizabeth Bettenhausen.
Thank you, Mr. President. I certainly want to extend my condolences to the engineer on the death of his mother. When we turn out to be the oldest in our family, it does give us some sobering thoughts. I emailed you, Mr. Gruber and Mr. Greshens, and then copied in the board members on my questions about 6B. And I want to raise only three quick questions, not all of them that I put in the written material. I want to introduce this by saying that I find the report in 6B very hard to understand. I think it is amorphous and vague in places where it should be much, much clearer. And so my first question is, at the end of the paragraph that starts the goal of technical workshops, it says, a preferred project alternative will be identified following further environmental analysis of the reasonable range of all that is used at the workshops and will be used again on August 9th. But I would encourage anybody in the community who wants to be extremely entertained by a presupposition arena regarding what truth consists in, to hop to the workshop at 11 a.m. on August 9th and just be entertained beyond constraints. My second question, and it refers now, I won't quote the whole paragraph, but the whole financial issue with the Army Corps of Engineers and the whole question of whether we can gain money from the Congress for the Army Corps of Engineers, which they can't get themselves, et cetera. I have one big question, which I have posed before and I shall pose again. If the Army Corps of Engineers and subcontractors spend all the currently appropriated funds and no more funds are forthcoming from the federal government, does this in itself close the project agreement between the Army Corps of Engineers and CCSD? In other words, if you don't have a buck, are you done? And I think this is rather likely, no matter how adept you all become at negotiating with DC, there are no foretastes of spilling money down our drains. My third question about a last paragraph. I will read that paragraph over because I don't understand it, and I'll just read it. Absent any additional federal appropriations for federal fiscal year 2012-2013, future input and direction received will need to consider potential impacts on project completion time as well as core staff funding. This leads into concerns over the need to obtain further data to support the definition and analysis of certain concepts. Such delays could also impact the remaining funds available for core staff. My question, does this paragraph mean to say that concepts and alternatives other than desalination will have to be studied by agents other than the Army Corps of Engineers and their subcontractors? And the other question, why would the EIS, be insufficient to meet, quote, the need to obtain further data to support the definition and analysis of certain concepts, since the EIR-EIS that is being worked on by the hired consultants is supposed to cover precisely that? So, friends, I don't like always to sound like I'm picky about the details and opposing everything you do. That's not my desire at all.
Good afternoon. Amanda Rice. So I made a big, giant version of the addendum to the general manager's report, the capital improvement summary, so that I could actually read it. Even with my glasses, it was impossible to see the whole thing on my computer screen. I need two screens, I guess. I have three questions, and they are all related to this seawater desalination line of that particular summary. Number one is in the budget column. Does this represent the CCSD's 25% contribution or reflect the total budgeted by the CCSD, by the Army Corps for the total project? What does that budget mean? Who set that budget? And is that budget supposed to be coming out of our pockets or somebody else's or the Army Corps, or is it combined? Then also in that column, there's a footnote that says four, which says that apparently the total construction costs are not listed there. There's a note that says they were estimated at $6.4 million and $20.1 million with solar power. So is that that $4 million that's already budgeted, is that supposed to be folded into that 16 or 20.1 million, or is that in addition to that 16 or 20.1 million? So those are my first two questions. The third question, and my last question, is in the dollars spent column of the same line. So the dollars spent. Is this money that we've spent? Is it money that's been spent on our behalf by the Army Corps of Engineers? Did it come out of the LAIF fund? Did it come out of our water rates? Or did all of it come from the federal government? The notes don't make it clear where that money actually, whether it was stuff that we spent or whether it was stuff that the Army Corps spent on our behalf for this project. And I think that it points to there's an issue that I've brought up a couple of times, that every month you get an expenditure report. Just a couple of questions that seem kind of important. Thanks.
Thank you. Just to follow up on that, because I agree, and that was one of my notes as well, where are we? If we remember, we talked to Kathleen Anderson, the project leader of Army Corps, and she told us weeks ago that she was going to have an up-to-date summary of expenses. And I am also concerned of the credits that we have, the $3 million credits and the ARA funds. Do we still have anything in those pots, or are they expended? And it sure looks like the management organization's out of money from this spreadsheet. And then finally, of course, is we spend a lot of time on desal, and I've mentioned this before, SCADA seems to be pushed aside. Stewart Street and Rodeo Grounds have lives of their own, but I think, and they seem to be progressing, but I think we need to, when the engineer comes back, to have a real, in August, a real statement of where we are on all four of these major projects. Other comments, thoughts? We're moving on then? Or do you have something?
No, I was just going to say I certainly concur with your comments there. It certainly appears that the funds that have been spent have pretty much been from the ARR funds and not from our own coffers, but again, I think we need to have a full-blown discussion of each of the projects and where we stand on them and how the funding is forthcoming get that discussion going.
Sure. Yeah. Final one is Tina Dickinson.
Tina Dixon, Cambria. I have to say that I absolutely echo everything that Elizabeth Bettenhausen brought up. I attended the March scoping session with the Army Corps of Engineers. I did not attend the June workshop, but I did attend the July workshop. I watched the June one the day after, and I have to say that from my perspective, this whole procedure has been extremely insulting. We're supposed to evaluate at the criteria, and it was an absolute farce. And what is interesting to me, I asked why there was not a representative from Army Corps, and I was told, oh, well, they're running out of money, so they couldn't be here. But I was also told that the week prior to the workshop, that the Army Corps was up here in Cayucas, in Morro Bay, checking out some areas that they had initially had shown at the scoping session. And so is anybody aware that the Army Corps was here before, prior to the workshop on July 19th? I would like to know that. And also, it seems much more, it would seem to me that that the Army Corps is just about out of the $3 million. President McKinney, you were asking earlier, what about the $166,000? Do we have an entitlement to get that back? So to keep going down this road seems to me, as I've said for a long time, futile. It would seem to me, too, that the board is looking into spending money, obviously, on consultants and looking into other alternatives. But we have not been shown from the workshops any alternatives at all. And it is extremely frustrating. Thank you.
Harry Farmer.
Ladies and gentlemen, how's everybody today? Another lovely day in Cambria, special place on planet Earth. I just want to make a couple of comments with regard to, let's say, the water situation in this community and how our money's being spent. I believe it was Merriweb that mentioned earlier with regard to the consultant fee. I believe it's $69,000 that we're paying for a consultant, which probably equals about what we were spending on a year with regard to the lobbyists that we had in Washington, D.C. So hopefully we'll get more money out of the 69 than we did the 72,000 a year that we were spending on the lobbyist. By the way, Mary was referencing the fact that perhaps this money could be better well spent on rebates on Washington, been even picked up on again. Also, gray water systems that people can use from their washing machines and reuse that water to go out into water their landscaping. It would be really interesting if the board would take a little bit more time and energy in pursuing these alternatives, which it doesn't seem that they've been doing for a heck of a long time now. I also want to mention the fact that I believe it's Humboldt County, and they've been doing this for probably about 30 years now, that they treat wastewater while by using it, putting the wastewater in a floodplain, and then about 3 years after that, all of the waste has been absorbed, the effluent has been absorbed, and that water is reused by the community for drinking. So perhaps we could consider doing that. And then finally, with regard to the spending of money, I just want to kind of refresh our memory. This goes back actually about 2 years. I believe it's both in July and August meetings of 2010. When current President McKinnon, who was a board member at that time, Greg Sanders was the president, so board member McKinnon, and also former board member D'Amico, two engineers with decades of experience in fiscal accountability and project development, both said at that time that they would not vote on continuing to pursue the desal project because, in their words, we don't know where the money's coming from, and we don't know how it's going to be spent. And so here we are 2 years later, And I believe it says here on the water supply projects, the reasonable range of alternatives studied within the EISER will likely include other alternatives beside seawater desalination. I don't quite know what likely. I mean, why aren't we discussing these other alternatives that have been available for years, like decades? Thank you.
Thank you, Harry. With that, no further public comments. 6C, member and committee reports. Board members? Director Clift.
Yes, I've got to have a report from the Alternate Water Committee, and I want to take some time to go through the where we're at and bring you up to date as to expectations. First of all, we range of alternatives where we're going to find the long-term solution. And now, on the short-term solutions, as you know, we have a consultant looking at a conservation plan. For the public, it was indicated in the newspaper that the consultant's fee of $69,000 was coming out of the money we had set aside for retrofits and rebates. That's not the case. The retrofit and rebate amounts in the budget are there, and this is coming out of professional services under the water budget. So that conservation plan, we are expecting to see a draft of that in September, and hopefully to have that before the board for approval in October. That is the point where a lot of what you've heard in the last few minutes of public discussion, we should have some very, very specific procedures on how we can conserve water, show no net increase, and be in a position to move forward on the intent to serve letter activity. One of the other things that we talked about and would like to bring forward either in the August, probably in the August meeting if we can, is a discussion of the Fryer report. We think that that report ought to be discussed here and that this board ought to endorse or reject any and all parts of that particular report, so that if there are parts of that report that we wish to find are very appropriate, we should officially do that so that it can be incorporated in the record when we start talking about the conservation plan. Moving on down, we're looking at connection fees, and that report should be available to us in September to October, and at least by October for this board, so that you can act on the connection fee situation. We're looking at in the August and September meetings to make contact with county and state representatives, explain to them the procedure we're going through, provide them drafts or comments on reports that are in the process, and make sure that they have either input or are at least in approval with the way we're going. So we'll make contact with all of those particular the appropriate people, whether they're the including the County Board of Supervisors to state representatives to the Coastal Commission. And then if we can have the conservation plan, the connection fees all completed by October, we would also request that the committee's recommendations will be to bring forward a plan for release of intent to serve letters based on the information that we have that's historical, information provided that if we approve it from the historical standpoint of the Fryer report, and backed up by the conservation plan and the connection fee approval, and be ready to, at that point in time, issue, authorize the issuance of intent to serve letters under the conservation plan. Now, that does not mean a removal of the moratorium, because, again, we still haven't come to grips with what kind of alternative we have for the long-term nature. But we believe that through the conservation program, as a start, we can offset water usage, just as was done in the past with retrofits and things to get the ball moving. And in effect, intent to serve letters could be issued based on very, very specific retrofit and rebate programs that will can show a specific a conservation of at least and maybe more than what a particular intent to serve letter would provide. Now, that's where we're at right now. We have took a look at one other area, and just for reporting factors, and again, it's about a 100-acre-foot margin between water supply availability and actual total production and meter deliveries. One of the concepts under what we hope under the conservation plan idea is that it would be absolutely measurable as to whether intent to serve letters are actually increasing the water usage. And to the extent that we can show and measure and actually determine that there is no net increase in water, we believe that we can issue under those basis, and that's the case we will try to make with all the people, that we can issue specific intent to serve letters that will not increase the water supply and not deal with the moratorium until we have further information on long-term water solutions. Anyhow, that's where the committee is right now. We'll be bringing things back probably in both August and September for approval and go from there.
I guess I could a comment or a question. Is it going to be the ad hoc committee that's going to be contacting the county and other entities between now and October? Is that the representative?
I think our intent is to use anyone who has contactability, and not necessarily, although the committee probably will hold responsibility for getting it done, we will use whatever sources that we have.
And the other thing, I wholly support the idea of putting the cart before the horse in a way. Let's get some letters issued. Let's track how it flows through the wait list and the code. Yeah. And I think there's a lot of support for making the code clear, easy to understand, fair, straightforward. But let's not let that get in the way. Let's issue something and use that as an opportunity to track exactly how they go. Do they, you know, what happens to them and how long it takes to get through the system, et cetera.
That was the committee's, you know, rather than sit down and try to revamp the code on speculation, that it was better to test our feet and see where the pitfalls deal and then try
amendments so that it all works appropriately, because of course the board has adopted ordinances which are local laws, and we need to then make sure that the program fits into that in some fashion. So we'll look at the mechanics, if you will, of how we implement it as we know more about what the report looks like and so on.
Council, I think that it was the thank you for the recommendation, but I think we just said, hey, let's put these out there. Let's put that as a back burner. Own opinion would be wonderful, but let's not put that in the way of us moving forward. I think that it's a good opportunity to test let's get the meters out there. And yes, as long as they're put out and they go according to the code, I'm for that. But let's not revamp or close a hole or change a loop. Let's find out where the loopholes are and then change them. That's my opinion.
But we don't want to go to jail either, right?
Well, I understand the concerns, and we'll look at it and make appropriate recommendations from a legal standpoint regarding how to structure implementing the goals that the board is outlining in terms of an approach.
We're confident of our council taking care of us. I wanted to bring up also, as we go madly into our conservation programs, which I fully endorse and the board endorses as well, but there are no roses without thorns. And I think the public should recognize the fact that, as Merle brought out, that we've saved perhaps 100 acre feet between what we say we have as a baseline supply of 810 acre feet and what we're using now, which is roughly 700 acre feet. But 100 acre feet, if you look at the cost of that at $6 a unit, and then on top of that, wastewater at $2 a unit, we're spending over $300,000 that is lost revenue that eventually we do need. And in addition, we have the goal of a 5% savings in potable water by 2020. So that in itself, excuse me, that's a public comment sheet. That's golden. That's golden. There again, you have another $100,000 that will be lost revenue. I think it's appropriate that we do have Madhouse for that report. But then on top of that, there's staff support. And the staff support is in many ways our people that the general manager is going to have to find manpower, women power, to implement. And then there's the actual implementation process that goes beyond that. It's this tracking function that also is required in order to present the evidence that allows us on this 2-to-1 comparison to be able to issue water meters, intent to serve letters. And the conservation measures themselves, the rebates, they're going to be $75,000 annually. So what I'm saying, when we look at lost revenue, when we look at the cost of a project such as conservation, which is the right thing to do, we must do, it's a very expensive process for the community, and they should recognize it. And I would suggest that it's a $500,000 program. And it's one that will be well served in saving water, but it may come at the expense of perhaps a rate increase. And I think that's what we're dealing with in the future. So from conservation standpoint, we have a program, we have expenses, we will save water, but somewhere along the way, we need alternative water sources that go beyond conservation, from my view. And that come right back again, and this is where we've had a very strained relationship with the Army Corps. And perhaps it equates to a divorce at some point in time. But the fact is, we need to have an alternate water source. As Merle brought out again, we're not removing anything right now from a moratorium standpoint. And in order to do so, we have to generate something that equates to more water versus simply the conservation as doing everything and all things. So with that said, I'm through from a conservation committee and also touching base on our alternate water supply ad hoc committee. Yeah, any other comments? Mary Webb.
Well, yeah, I really wish this would be the subject of its own workshop, because this is what we really need to talk about, and we actually need like 2 hours to talk about it. I absolutely agree, of course, conservation is the way to go. I do stand behind the Fryer report, but, you know, maybe you need to have Maddow subcontract with Fryer and save some money. We certainly didn't pay anywhere near $69,000 to Mr. Fryer. And, I mean, I would say a fraction of what you're paying Maddow. So maybe we can save some money by, you know, and I even talked to Jim Fryer about that. He might totally be willing to do something like that. He already knows the situation here. Give him a call. I'll send you his email address. On not lifting the moratorium, but adding connections, you know, we're going to have to be really, really careful, really clear here. We have 32% vacancy right now. Jim Fryer didn't analyze all of Cambria's situation. So if you add, you can't add connections and then all of a sudden all of the vacancy starts to fill back up again, then all of a sudden we're using more water again. Even if you're doing no net increase now, it may be an overall increase if all of a sudden all the houses start getting filled up again. So I don't know how you build that into adding connections. The other thing, the Coastal Commission was very, very clear about adding connections. You need to do protect the water, protect the habitat, protect the fish. The tidewater goby, the red-legged frog, has to have a certain amount of water. They need to know, we need to know how much water the habitat needs to not be harmed by growth. That is why you would have to do an in-stream flow study. In-stream flow study, you probably could have done one for $100,000. Again, the $69,000 were given to Maddow could have gone to an in-stream flow study. I think that's going to be required before you add connections. BRP, the build-out reduction program, was estimated at $38 million. Some form of your connection fee is going to have to go, some percentage is going to have to go to build-out reduction. If you make a connection fee, $15,000, there's no way you're going to have enough in your connection fees to start paying off part of that build-out reduction. So you can't. The build-out reduction is mitigation for growth. I'm coming from an environmental point of view. It's the growth that causes the most amount of damage in our sensitive environment. So if you don't cover these environmental check off these environmental checklists that have been asked at the same time you're adding connections. I mean, that's not going to fly. I'm not going to pay a surcharge or reduce my water use while you're adding connections. So, you know, there's all kinds of discussion there that needs to happen. We need really a lot more time than this to talk about it. Deed restrictions should probably be placed on people's properties then. If you add connections where if they're going to retrofit their property, that in the deed it's going to have to say, these things are retrofitted and you can't change it. So when a property gets sold again, if somebody changes their low-flow shower head to a, you know, full seven, you know, one of those ones that have like rainbirds all over inside, you know, your shower, that's going to have to be removed. And it can't be put back in place again. Otherwise, you know, what you're going to see is water use going back up again. So it has to be some way to ensuring. The other last thing on my environmental checklist is the Cambria Forest Management Plan was also listed in the Fryer report. To help Cambria's forest manage the forest, stop cutting down the trees, can save us water. It can. The health of our watershed is dependent also on the health of our forest. The Cambria Forest Management Plan was never funded. So, again, make the connection fee the price of an intent to serve letter. What is that right now? $154,000, right? That's what it costs to get an intent to serve letter right now. I think a water meter just sold for $125,000. That money should go to the build-out reduction, Cambria Forest Management Plan, in-stream flow studies, new ordinances. Then you don't have to raise our rates. Thank you.
Elizabeth? It's now on a first-name basis.
Thank you, Mr. President. I took very quick notes, and I certainly can't ask a lot of questions, but I can ask a couple of clarifications. I'd hope that the Water Alternatives Ad Hoc Committee would define carefully the meaning of long-term and the meaning of short-term. Long-term might be contingent upon the results from EIR-EIS, but that doesn't say how long the term might be. And short term, is that 1 year? Is that 2 years? Are you looking possibly to start issuing intent to serve letters over what, the next 5 year period? So I would really very much appreciate if the ad hoc committee could be completely specific about what you mean when you use those two words. Then I would very much hope that when you talk about issuing intent to serve under the conservation plan, that you build in serve letters, because these initial ones didn't save water. My final comment, and I agree with Mary, we really need open workshops on this, and serious workshops, not playthings. I have asked for a decade of the CCSD board to give us statistics on water use which show the ranking of residential use from those of us who use two per bimonthly units bimonthly to those who use God knows how much. Commercial, I want to see who uses a dab, real estate agents in the office, and who uses a hell of a lot. We have not yet provided these statistics. I am now saying to you, if I live to be at that meeting whenever this comes up, I will ask specifically, how are you monitoring the actual use of those to whom you have issued intent to serve letters before lifting the moratorium? I want to know exactly how you are ensuring that they will conserve. Or I will put it one more differently. You've got 10 intent to serve, new houses, fantastic, and all of a sudden, the use in Cambria has gone up by, let's say, 39 acre feet. How do you know it's them? How do you know that it wasn't the new jacuzzis at a motel? I mean, how do you know? And you've got to have the data, friends. You can't just in advance make the claims that we're going to monitor it. We're going to track it. And I agree with Mr. McKinnon, the president of this board. Lost revenue. I say it again and again, and I'm glad to hear you say it, sir. The more conservation, the more revenue we lose. So does that mean we need more water? Not necessarily at all, but we have to look at ways that we can balance those two interests. And I don't think, I won't blab on. I just really am glad to hear this preliminary report, and God knows I would love to see some specifics when the draft report and then the final report come. Because if it's just vague again, if it's just amorphous, guess who's going to stand up here and, I'll use the word, complain.
Finally, Tina Dickinson.
That would offset a rate increase. I mean, we can go back to the AGP videotapes. That's what was said, that if we do this, then we don't have to do that. But Director Barringer?
Correct.
That's one Correct. Thing. Director Barringer, I have a real problem with you wanting to skip over the legal process. We pay a lot of money each month to have legal counsel here to advise you. He knows far more about the law than any of you all put together, I would say. And when he makes a comment, and I've noticed in the last two or three months, you just kind of not wanted to hear what legal counsel has had to say. But I would say that when you're talking about Water Code 350, which I read to you at last month's meeting, the two really critical words in that code are to, and with respect to the moratorium, is that you have to either augment or replenish your water supply. Those words have to be looked at very carefully through the eyes and mind of legal counsel who is advising you. And to just say, let's rush this thing through, you can't do that. And then, Director Clift, last month you said, we just lift the moratorium. You absolutely said that. And then today you're saying, well, we can't lift the moratorium. And my guess is that maybe you might have looked at it more closely as to the legal ramifications of just lifting the moratorium. We know that through the Planning Commission, the GMO would stay at 0%. The only way that the Planning Commission, about 3 months ago, I think it was, said that you would have to, CCSD directors, talk to members of the Planning Commission, and that there would have to be an amendment made. but that the GMO would still stay at 0%. So you can't, I mean, I would, yeah, great if you can give us out 10 intent to serves. That would be great. My concern is the legal ramifications of doing so and how we, and then when I said that the possibility of lawsuits ensuing, once you've opened those up, what happens, you know, 10 years from now? You guys won't be on the board, and madam, you will not be on the board in 10 years. But somebody else will, and the community will have to take care of whatever happens. And so I would say, you know, new hookups, that the ratio would be different, but of course. But we should be able to, smart enough to figure out a conservation plan without spending $69,000. So those are my thoughts. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Can I make a comment?
Oh, certainly.
And I agree with the statements that Ms. Bentenhausen made relative to being very specific about the defining short and long term. And my perception is that the short term would be 1 year at a time, just so that you can measure it. And if a conservation program that offsets the water usage so that the water usage remains the same, then we should be okay in terms of the level of funding staying at what it is today in terms of revenue. But I would think that short term would be within a measurable period, and our measurable period seems to be 1 year as to whether we are using more water. Now, it's a good concept to talk about restrictions on any new growth, new intent to serve letters be issued, and I'm sure that will become as a recommendation also. So those are just quick comments And long-term being the kinds of things that we're talking about where you would actually be adding additional water to the system. And that's the point in time where you'd talk about the removing the moratorium. Anyhow, quick comments.
Final comment on that as well, because it addressed my comment before. 10 water meters equates to 2 acre-feet of water. And for that, you could get almost $200,000 in fees. So it's not a bad thing, and recognize that there is some latitude whether or not people come back, the people that have left. But the overriding reason for perhaps the initial releases would be for the economy of Cambria. I don't know if any of you have lost a job and had bills to pay and so on and so forth and had to leave paradise for somewhere else. Extra water usage compared to what we have used in the past. And I think it makes good economic sense for the CCSD as well. With that, we're moving on to consent agenda, item 7.
I move approval of the consent agenda.
Do I have a second?
I'll second it.
Those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Carried. Hearings and appeals. Public hearing to consider adoption of Resolution 32-2012, ordering abatement of public nuisance for fire hazard fuel reduction program. General Manager.
Thank you, Board President and Board members. The recommendation by staff on this particular item is to receive the staff report and review Resolution 32-02012, and then to open the public hearing, consider and overrule any protest or objections, and adopt Resolution 32-2012, authorizing the fire chief to abate the nuisance by having weeds and debris removed from the parcels of the property listed in Exhibit A. We did add some green sheets. The fire department has done a really good job in working to up to really the last moment on contacting residents and making sure that
the weed abatement within the community is moving forward, so kudos to them and the good job that Captain Bitto and the fire department have done.
What do we have to do with this?
It's a public hearing to hear any protests or objections, so you should open the public hearing, take any comments, and then if there are any protests or objections, you can consider them. As is indicated in the staff report, you can overrule them. Ultimately, you'll be adopting the resolution, which then authorizes proceeding with the abatement through the district's contractor for those properties that still need weed abatement or fire hazard fuel reduction abatement.
Thank you. With that, public, any comments, questions? None? We need a motion then.
I move.
Administrative fee of $200. That's an additional $200 to the original $200?
The current administrative fee is $400. So, yes, it would be put on the tax bill at the $400 rate.
Right.
My understanding is that the fee study is looking at reducing the fee to $200, so that may be why it was worded that way in the report. But in any case, the current fee is $400, and the break we've been giving people who pay early is to allow it at $200.
And I'm in favor of that, because otherwise, what's my incentive of paying you the $200 and then not just keeping it in my pocket for an extra year at zero interest? So, but I assume right now it's $400 for these ones we put on. Okay, that's fine. I'll oppose the fee thing later on.
Does it also mean that Mission wouldn't get paid until the tax bill was paid? How does Mission get paid?
Doesn't have anything to do with Mission, does it?
This is a different item.
Yeah, this is the one on the weed abatement.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. Got it. Sorry. Further discussion? Those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carried. Okay. Now, the regular business, finally. 9A, discussion and consideration to adopt Ordinance 4-2012, amending CCS Code 8.04.080E, relating to the extensions of time for intent to serve letters. I have one person that wants to speak to this issue, Elizabeth Bettenhausen.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. As you know, I sent probably too recently an email to all of you regarding this with the questions that I wanted to raise today. And I want to add a question to that. I think that the intent to serve letters being considered as a possibility for the future might well contribute to the betterment of the economic future of Cambria, but how? I'd really like some specificity rather than simply a rhetorical incantation honored by the CCSD. End of quotation. How many intent to serve letters were issued prior to the moratorium decision of November 2001? How many? How many of these intent to serve letters are still, to use the language from the code, currently valid intent to serve letters? How many of them are? 3, do the extension requirements in the code that you're looking at apply to the intent to serve letters issued before the moratorium? Is there any constraint on extension, or are they just, no matter when they get handed in to you, they're going to be honored, as the website says? To how many of the intent to serve letters issued before the moratorium have extensions been granted? Have any intent to serve letters at all been issued since the moratorium? I know that technically the answer should be a quick no, but I'm not asking that simply that. I'm asking you, have any intent to serve letters at all been issued since the moratorium? If so, under what circumstances and conditions? And then the point I made last month, I want to reiterate, and that was about affordable housing. But before I do that, I want to say all the questions I've just asked are data questions that have to do with what you are now thinking about doing, maybe as soon as October, and that is issuing more intent to serve letters. My question is, how many will we have then added together? And are you going to do the evaluation of water use given those intent to serve letters that are still outstanding? But the affordable housing program raises a whole other issue about more meters. In the affordable housing section of the of 8 in the code, the board of directors allocates six, I'm quoting, the board of directors allocates 6 residential units per calendar year under the affordable housing program. The affordable housing program allocation not used during a calendar year shall be carried over to the next year. That was enacted in the year 2003. My questions are, how many allocations have not been used during each calendar year and thus have been carried over to the next year? Is this cumulatively done from year to year? What is the total allocation of residential units now for affordable housing in this district? And 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. 9 times 6 is 54. There might be 54 allocations outstanding for affordable housing, which we don't know when they might be used, of course, but they would be there. We know that there were 29 intent to serve letters issued the month before the moratorium was declared. 29 or 39, I can double check that for you. And so let's say it's 29. So we could have right there 86 possible. And then we have, oh, don't let me forget, we have all the grandfathered pipeline meters. We have the active meters currently not plugged in to the water system. And we have some other intent to serve letters that have been bound over. Friends, picky Elizabeth, namely me, does not like to overwater cactus. Doesn't work. I don't like to chew on too dead meat. I'd like it to be sort of fresh beef. Details, details, details make up our lives, friends. And as a theologian and ethicist, that's me. I do not like us to make huge decisions about the common welfare of the district without having solid data that we actually take into account before making policy decisions. Thank you.
That's all public comment. I need a motion.
Again, as noted in the staff report, this particular ordinance was introduced at the last board meeting. Mm-hmm. So in order to proceed with adoption, there would need to first be a motion to waive further reading. Then we would read the ordinance by title only, and then there would need to be a motion to adopt the ordinance.
Okay.
Okay, I'll move that we waive further reading and read by title only.
I'll second that.
Those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Passed.
And then to read by title only, if you'll bear with me for a moment, it's fairly short. Ordinance amending section 8.04.080E relating to extensions of time for intent to serve letters.
Okay, I'll move the general manager to have a little more leeway in not having to bring back every 6 months or every year an extension. And that it's a savings of staff time and it has to do with hardships and it's not a situation that should get anything out of control or out of some kind of a problem.
I would concur with that
analysis. I too feel that it's important to give the general manager more flexibility in terms of dealing with some of the nitty-gritties of the intent to serve. I do, however, acknowledge that Ms. Bettenhausen's questions have raised my own interest in the current situation with intent to serve and some of the historical background, and I would also like to get to ask that we get some staff work on this to give us a summary of where we stand with respect to the intent to serve letters that have been issued in the past and what the status is of
letters. One question I think this fairly quickly could be answered is, are there any residential intent to serve letters out there that we have extended and are on extensions now?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I agree with you.
But I don't know the exact number, so I'll...
Right. That is appropriate, probably, that we have the research on that.
I agree with Mr. Thompson's... questions, and I think that it would be good. I'd like to understand that. I think that in some cases it may be ununderstandable. I mean, certainly we should know what was going on. I do think some years ago we did authorize some, or not we, the prior board authorized something for a low-income housing or for somebody. That's the only instance that I, from a citizen, recognized as being a letter being issued since the moratorium. I do want to ask counsel a question, though, because there's some degree of angst. Isn't it true that a water district cannot keep an affordable housing program from progressing because of lack of resources?
I'm only somewhat familiar with the affordable housing program and the code section that was mentioned. As part of housing elements of general plans and so on that have to be certified by the state. So it's a fairly comprehensive process, and I'm guessing that the district's code section was done in cooperation with the county because of the need to have a program like that. I don't know that a district is prohibited or how that, you know, the way you specifically worded that question, I don't know that I can answer that part of it, but overall, it certainly appears that we have a program that was done in conjunction with the county because of the needs and demands that are put on them with respect to affordable housing and having a program in place to facilitate that.
Would you mind next month providing that information? Because I think there's a degree of angst that people might have that somebody might come in and build 100 units. And I do believe that when this was being discussed is that someone could, and the state was saying you cannot claim that you have a lack of resources in order to deny that. Yeah, that was my understanding. And it might be good for everybody, but it'd be good for people to know that we may not even have jurisdiction in that case.
We can certainly look into that. I don't know that there is a prohibition like that, but I can certainly check.
Director Robinette.
Thank you. I did appreciate the questions that Elizabeth raised, too. I think they are excellent questions. My own questions right now in this discussion, I do believe that we need a report. We need it to be very clear to all of us, all the categories of possibilities and pending. These are questions. These aren't confirmations. How many intent letters are actually still active out there from prior to the moratorium, or are there any that don't have those special categories of grandfathered in or this or that? So I really would like to know the answer to that, how many there are. If I know how many there are, then I want to find out then really, what are our current regulations regarding, I'm talking residential right now, what are the current regulations regarding extensions? So are those extensions, are they just out there on extension or not? Or why are they sitting there if they're actually valid and could be activated? bound by those requirements. But I think it is that we don't want any mysteries about it. We need to know how many intent to serve letters, and maybe there's a small amount. The thing is not knowing. That's the thing. So it would be really good if we just had that picture.
Further comment? So summary again, that there's really three categories, the grandfathered, the outstanding intent to serve letters, and what in fact we do. I was surprised, the affordable housing quotas, carry over, or how do you deal with that? And the dispositions, I mean, if there's intent to serve letters that you can somehow annotate, you know, the reasons being that they're extended or whatever. And it does put a pressure on you, General Manager, as far as someone wanting to maximize their return, and they somehow extract a couple years of sitting on a intent to serve letter, which increases the value of potentially their property, but doesn't help us from the standpoint of building and fees and so forth. So is it okay? Is it going to work for you as far as making that kind of a summary for us? I think we need it for both the public transparency and ourselves.
Yeah, I know that Monique Madrid, our administrative services officer, is working on this. And they're good questions. I think we need to have answers to them.
Ms. Bettenhausen, thank you very much for the second time.
You're very welcome.
With that, 9B. We need to vote?
We need a vote. Oh, this was discussion. So just call for the vote.
I'm trying to get this over with. Okay, we need a vote. Those in favor?
Aye.
Nobody's opposed. The motion is carried.
May I just ask one thing then after that, since the motion is carried? The request, though, that we do have the spreadsheet with those other questions and those uncertainties shared with us next time.
We'll do our best amongst all the other things that one person is doing, so we'll do our best. Thank you, Board President and Board members. Before you today is an opportunity for us to be a part of a integrated regional water management plan. We do have a representative that serves on the RAC committee. That's our district engineer, Bob Greshens, and I'm the alternate. But there is grant funding available out there for water projects. However, part of the criteria is that you're a signatory for an MOU, a Memorandum of Understanding, for a regional water integrated regional water management plan. Most agencies, most water agencies, everybody within the immediate jurisdictions are part of an integrated regional water management plan. For one reason or another, we chose not to be part of an integrated regional water management plan during the Lake Nacimiento pipeline project. Most recently, Napomo's water project did not move forward, so there are monies available. However, those monies that are available that the county is soliciting input on are projects that are of regional nature. But I think that for us to, you know, we're kind of an island unto ourselves up here, and I think it would be a good idea to become a signatory for the MOU for Integrated Regional Water Management Plan.
We do have one request to speak on this issue, Mary Webb.
Mary Webb, Cambria. I was so glad to see this item on the agenda. Yay, I can smile. We're actually moving into a different direction and going with maybe a regional approach to some kind of a water solution, which mm-hmm. I think is an excellent idea. I think the CCSD at one point was part of an MOU with the IWRM back in 2006 and 2007, because I've got, you know, paperwork that we were ranked number 10 of 12 projects because our project was desalination. We were ranked 6 out of 7 projects because the only project we had was desalination. We were ranked 12 out of 17. Again and again, we missed a lot of opportunities for monies that were given out. $24 million, I think, was given out in 2004, 2005, 2006. I mean, there millions have gone to other organizations that signed onto these Prop 50 and Prop 84 grants. So, in addition, does this mean, since we are signing this MOU, that to be qualified
specifically was for a regional project? In the future, I don't know what the criteria will be for future grant funding, but the important part to note is that we have to be a player. We have to be involved in this process to be even considered, whether it's a regional project or hopefully something individual that we can do up here. But even if you were to go after other state grants and not just in our immediate area, one of the criteria in many instances is that you're part of an integrated regional water management plan. So it's a very good question, but I think if we were to ever go after any other grant funding, you know, the first box is going to ask you, are you involved in an integrated regional water management plan, whether it's state or federal funding, because they want to see that you're working collaboratively together with other agencies.
Okay, that's the way I've read, too, seems like that this is coming down from the state level, that instead of small little towns of 6,000 people having their own desalination plant, we would have desalination plants every 2 miles up and down the state of California, which would be ridiculous. So the other thing was that, you know, Ken Renshaw came up with a really good idea about this pipeline to Whale Rock, and what he says in his analysis was that, you know, a pipeline works both ways. It's not just that we could get, you know, a water exchange from San Luis Obispo because of Nacimiento. We could get water exchange from Whale Rock to come down to Cambria. We could also water bank. We could send our overflow winter runoff water through that pipeline to Whale Rock Reservoir and just have it held there for us and then take it back again in the summer when we need it. And I think that project is a doable, sellable, it could be a regional project because other people, we would be tied into Whale Rock. We would be, if we needed some of the Nacimiento water, it would be, you know, doing the exchange with San Luis Obispo. But even simpler, we could send our own water back up to Whale Rock. And I think, you know, if that project's maybe, you know desalination, it was never going to be $20 million. That number just came out of estimates from, you know, 2001 or something. Desal is actually going to be more like $58, maybe even $75 million. So this pipeline to Whale Rock idea, you know, maybe, and then the Army Corps, I think, was at least 3 times overestimated what the cost of a pipeline to Whale Rock would be. I think they said $18 million, which is just ridiculous, and I think we need an independent study of that. I think that price is probably $6 million, $10 million, you know, maybe. When you compare $10 million to what we've done for 20 years, it's a no.
$18 million. I'm going to try as a policy not to quote any kind of number until we get something, and that I just had an opportunity to say that because, you know, everybody, well, it's really triple that or double that. I don't know. I think we're trying to get real numbers. I think that's what the Army Corps of Engineers is trying to do, is get a real estimate. I think we're trying to get some real numbers so when we do see something on paper, we can say, well, at least it's a number that has some substantiation. But I move that we adopt. What do we have to do? Do we have to... Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Move to make it.
There are two resolutions that need to be adopted.
I move that we discuss and consider to adopt resolution approving entering into a moratorium of understanding for purposes of grant funding and adopt resolution number 3 approving the integrated regional water management plan and avoid further reading.
What? I second it.
There you go. Good enough. Those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion approved. Closing item. Oh, okay. Future agenda items. Requests from board members. Somehow we're getting... Yeah, no. Closing remarks, if you please. What number is that?
Ten.
Okay. Let's put it in number 10. Mr. McKinnon.
Thank you, Jerry McKinnon. Being a creature of old habits, I remember a time when there was a section at the end of the agenda as well as at the beginning, and I just thought it well would come up. Thank you very much. Communications for me come either from the head or from the heart, and this one is from the heart. Tomorrow, July 27th, is the 59th anniversary of the conclusion of the Korea conflict. The 38 months where our troops from the United Nations fought against the spread of communism, an overt act of war to keep it from happening, has its consequences today, I'm pretty sure. We're in a Veterans Memorial building dedicated to the men who have lost their lives for the protection of our country. Over 40,000 men lost their lives. The consequences we have, we don't know where they would have been. So I just hope that we'll remember the importance of the 38 months from June 25, 1950, until July 27, 1953, how important they were for that forgotten war. Thank you very much.
Well said. Thank you very much. With that, we will now adjourn to closed session. Thank you.